ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय. यथा त्रिवर्गं गुरुभिः आत्मनेयुपशिक्षितम् न साधु मेने चक्षितम् न साधु मेने तक्षिकम् द्वन्द्वारमोपर्वणितम्. Translation proposed by Srila Prabhupada. The teachers Shanda and Amarka instructed Prahlad Maharaj in the three kinds of material advancement called religion, economic development and sense gratification. Prahlad, however, being situated above such instructions, did not like them. For such instructions are based on the duality of worldly life, which involve one in a materialistic way of life, marked by birth, death, old age, and disease. Purport: the entire world is interested in the materialistic way of life. Indeed, practically 99.9% of the people in the three worlds are uninterested in liberation or spiritual education. Only the devotees of the Lord, headed by such great personalities as Prahlad Maharaj and Narad Muni, are interested in the real education of spiritual life. One cannot understand the principles of religion while staying on the material platform. Therefore, one must follow these great personalities. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 6.3.20, Swayambhur Narada Shambhu Kumaro Kapilo Manu Prahlado Janako Bhishmo Balir Vaya Sakir Vayam. One must follow in the footsteps of such great personalities as Lord Brahma, Narada, Lord Shiva, Kapila, Manu, the Kumaras, Prahlad Maharaj, Bhishma, Janaka, Bali Maharaj, Shukdev Goswami, and Yamaraj. Those interested in spiritual life should follow Prahlad Maharaj. In rejecting the education of religion, economic development, and sense gratification, one should be interested in spiritual education. Therefore, the Krishna consciousness movement is spreading all over the world, following in the footsteps of Prahlad Maharaj, who did not like any of the materialistic education he received from his teachers. Srila Prabhupada is famous for many reasons, but one important reason is his boldness. Very fearless outspokenness of the concepts of Krishna consciousness, an absolutely non-compromising and non-ambiguous manner. Sometimes even to the extent of startling his audience, how he could be so much, for example, the use of the word rascal, which is, Prabhupada is famous for that also, one of the reasons, uses the word rascal. But Prabhupada explains sometimes in his own lectures that it is not my own coined word. I am simply envoy of Krishna. I am repeating. So Krishna is saying you are rascal, so I am saying you are rascal also.
Obviously, this is an unpalatable word to the audience, to be everybody, you know, respectable people sitting called rascal. But that's what Prabhupada is. And we love him for that. And here, he says very, very powerfully, clearly, alarmingly rather, I would say. He said here, those interested in spiritual life, that means I guess all of us who are sort of interested here, and many more, should follow Prahlad Maharaj in rejecting the education of religion, economic development and sense gratification. Very powerful. That means he is saying that the entire system of academics of the whole world is worthy of nothing else except rejection. Now who can say something like this? Who has the guts, the power, the fearlessness to say that all the money, all the intelligence, all the intellectual prowess be invested in entire education system of the entire world? What of Balvidya Mandiras and Pathshalas, they are okay, small things, small time things, but MIT, IIT, Yale University and all those, Princeton and all those big universities, and how much they are teaching, and how many students are there in each campus, and how much money is being spent all over the world on education. And who can say that all this which is being done is simply worthy of rejection? You have to be Prabhupada to say this, nobody else. No, there's no second person who can say this. That is the power of his conviction. Because the whole thing is completely atheistic. There is no mention among the millions of courses. How many courses are there in place like Yale and Princeton? How many courses? I don't know. Somebody of you may know. You people are all more educated. What of courses are being the catalog of courses? None of them, not even one of them, remotely talk about the goal of life. The real goal of life. They talk about the goal of life definitely, which is these three things, of course. Like first you have dharma, artha, kam, and moksha. This is the Chaturpurushat of the Vedic literature. So demon said, what moksha? It's all stupid, you know. Let's see only three. Dharma, artha and kam. In Kali Yuga, it gets dropped, everything gets dropped in Kali Yuga. The dharma also goes off. Artha and kam. But actually if you go to see, people are so degraded that there is no kam. There's hardly any fulfillment of desires. It is just economic development. That's all. Just do it, economic development. There is no fulfillment of any desire taking place. If you go to see, even 5,000 years into Kali Yuga, that there is so much of focus, a natural focus, extreme focus on your economic development, that even the factor of calm, fulfillment of desires, that also gets evaporated. I mean, if you work for money for 15 hours, in a day, where is your time for kama? There is no time for kama. It's just so dead in the night. Anybody in Bombay will tell you that they leave in the morning at 7:30 average. And practically no man, woman maybe a little earlier because, but no man ever reaches his home before 9:30, 10 average. This is fact. There's an average man. And there are many more who reach at 11:30. So we can see it is a completely crazy society we're living in. It's a fact. Prabhupada, when he says that, who's crazy, it is true. Anybody, any sane man can look out of the window and say, what is going on here? It's a crazy place. There is no leisure time, there is no focus on health, there is no recreation whatsoever. There is nothing. It is just money, 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 money. Prabhupada could go to MIT and challenge them openly. So where is that course which makes you understand why, you know, the nature of life and consciousness? Huh? It is so, you know, who could say that in MIT? You go there and try to be goody-goody and try to be good to the pally, the faculty and the principal and the dean and say, ah, he's a nice man, he's from Swami, he had come. And he's not a sycophant or anybody like that who just said, he has gone and say to please people. He wanted to please only Krishna and nobody else. Huh? If Krishna is pleased, you know, walking through the tree, who cares, you know, if the dean is pleased or not pleased. You know. He could challenge them and said, where is that course that teaches you about consciousness? It is so bewildering. I mean, when I look at myself and what I know in life today, practically I did not know anything of this world till I read Srila Prabhupada's books. And many of you may even feel like that. Whatever little I know of this world, the reality of this world, is only when I first held a book of Prabhupada in my hand and read it. Till such time, even though I may be, you know, doing this course, that course, whatever course, but he didn't know anything about reality. There's no understanding of reality or what this world is all about. It's nothing. It's just doing some course, just some to get some certificate. There's no knowledge whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And if you remove that from any devotee's life, whatever he learned from Prabhupada's books, what is he left with? Just remove that. Suppose he rejects that. Like we're talking about rejecting here. Suppose a devotee rejects that knowledge, what is he left with? He left simply with animal existence. That's what he's left with, definitely. Huh? Living like just like animals. Yesterday I was going up the bridge in Mira Road. I was there about 8:30 in the morning on the bridge, and I was looking down. The type of crowd which hangs around in a second class or first class compartment is unbelievable. How many people just hang on to with three fingers, just three or four fingers, to that strip which is there outside the, you know, train, just three fingers, and maybe half, you know, one third of a foot down. So four fingers down and four fingers up. And that's holding your 70 kilo body against the wind and against all that. Oh, what's happening? What is this? The buffaloes go only two in a wagon. The buffaloes travel in a goods compartment, they're two. They look at each other and they smile and Aram said they're going, and then there's a lot of breeze, and the goods compartment have no doors. The goods compartment have no doors, and the cross ventilation is there. And there's getting a lot of grass inside there for the buffaloes. They can just eat whenever they want or sleep whenever they want. It's so comfortable being an animal in Kali Yuga. Isn't it? But it is a curse to be a human being if you're not in Krishna consciousness. Isn't it true? Think about it. It's a curse if you're a human being, if you're not transcendentally situated, at least not transcendentally situated, forget transcendentally situated, that's very far. If that's not transcendentally connected, at least. If you're not connected with some transcendental process, human life in Kali Yuga is simply hell. No matter what economic status you are belonging to, that it hardly matters. In fact, people who have more money are worse, in fact. They have far less time even for that what the average man has got. So, why is Srila Prabhupada talking about rejecting? Because the first aphorism of Brahma Sutra is Brahma Jigyasa. That there has to be a focused attention on this Jigyasa. Only Brahma Jigyasa, not on anything else. And therefore, we find that when that jignasa is not there, all that remains is animal life. Dharma eko adhiko vishesho, dharma hinam pashubhi samana. Now, the two most powerful forces in the world, the most powerful fields in the world, which govern human action, human behavior, human thought processes, human worldview, are science and religion. These are two most powerful components of human life. There is no, I cannot think of any third thing. It is just what science says and what religion says. which combined make your entire world view. What you stand for, what you feel your identity is, like that. But when you reject religion and keep only one, science, then you lose complete direction. Science is important. Rather, it is very, very important. This is how Prabhupada makes us understand. So, we are not in a position to actually say that we can reject the way Prabhupada is saying here. But we can Krishnaize something. Prabhupada also gave us the option of Krishnaizing things which cannot be rejected. Correct? So, Prabhupada empowered his personal disciple, his first scientist disciple, Bhakti Swarup Damodar Maharaj Goswami, was a bona fide scientist in America, and he had all scientific knowledge. Prabhupada empowered him to understand what should be the view of devotees like ourselves regarding the subject of science. And we need to have a more mature understanding. We are not going to be able to really go out in the world and preach the way Prabhupada preached and reject scientist kick on your boots type of approach. That approach will make us have a lot of boots on our face. We don't have the potency of Prabhupada to go into and say that it's all nonsense, all bogus, all of you are, you know, bunch of fools and rascals. Nobody can say that. That is Prabhupada's exclusive adhikara to say that. But the approach which his empowered disciples have had is a synthesis. Synthesis of science and religion. That means science is useful. It gives us so many things of this world. But then we lose direction and focus because we don't know how to use it. It's like a lot of power is generated through scientific advancement, but the power is not channelized. So it's like a fire, which is huge fire, like an inferno practically. But that huge energy of fire, if not channelized, can simply burn. Right? Like a furnace also has fire. But the furnace fire is actually to melt the gold or the iron or the ore and to, you know, remove the impurity. Because it's channelized, focused fire. So all the impurities go out and you get pure iron, pure gold, pure copper, pure bronze, whatever you want. All the other things are removed. But when you have just a indiscriminate fire which takes place in a house by short circuit or something, then everything in that fire just gets consumed, finished. So science is like a huge fire. But because it is not channelized fire, it is simply destroying existence of the people in this world. So that which is made for comfort and luxury and pleasure will and is becoming the source of pain, misery and death. It is so important to see like this and understand it deeply, so we don't really become enamored by this scientific progress ourselves. It's one thing to say in a public forum, this science is that, but how much of it we also embrace ourselves in our life? We embrace a lot of scientific gadgets and, you know, use them. But to see that how we can synthesize the two things, that is the proper approach. Because, like Bhadu Sadamata Maharaj would say, abortion, for example. So you have so much of technology is used to actually abort the fetus. But then you bring religion in the picture, then you get the element of bioethics. Then you have the element of bioethical thinking. Is it ethical? Whatever science is doing, whatever science is saying, kill the fetus, is it ethical to do that? If science is saying, fly these planes and, you know, whatever happens to the ozone layer, doesn't matter. Is it ethical? Or kill this guy because he is useless, he is terminal sickness. Is it ethical to plug out the ventilator? So all these elements of religion actually come to the into the forefront of discussion when you bring religion in the picture. And secondly, and most importantly, it brings the soul into picture. So it starts off, education may start off with a state of complete ignorance where people don't know anything about this. It gradually builds up whereby you come in contact with a pure devotee of the Lord, where you get some connection with Krishna consciousness. That's the second step. Like Bhakti Sabdanta Maharaj, we cannot say he's in ignorance because he was a eternal sort of Prabhupada, but, you know, yes. So he was only in scientific knowledge and then the connection with Prabhupada. So the connection is made. So that's the stage that we all of us are. We have made a connection with the pure devotee of the Lord. Now then from that stage onward, there has to be further evolution. Because the soul actually cannot go back to Godhead unless there is complete evolution of consciousness. So our consciousness at that time is in a bud type state. It has to flower into a full blown consciousness. That means, what is full blown means complete awareness of the absolute truth. In as much of fullness as the Lord can empower us to understand. So that flowering of consciousness has to take place. Now that flowering of the bud is dependent on one very important factor. And that is the element of faith. It is not knowledge which takes us back to Godhead. It is faith which takes us back to Godhead. It's very important to understand this. If we examine our Vedic acharyas, Prabhupada says we should lead from the, you know, learn from the great personalities. If you see Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, how much knowledge he had before even meeting Gaur Prasad Babaji Maharaj. Now he had so much knowledge. He was like a personified library himself. Prabhupada himself said he read one book, it was there in his brains for the rest of his life. Huh? And how much he had read. He had read volumes and volumes and volumes of books. He knew astrology, astronomy, Sanskrit, the scriptures. He knew so much. Now one would think that here is a person who has as a Siksha Guru, Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Now why is this person hell-bound upon getting initiation from an illiterate person? This is such a startling example in our scripture that even though you have transcendental knowledge, not just mundane knowledge, as against Keshav Kashmiri, who was just a terrible, you know, like a monster of a man of knowledge. He could devour anybody in debate because by his monstrous knowledge, huh? Huge. Saraswati would speak from his tongue. So we're not talking about that type of thing. Here is a person who had so much transcendental knowledge. But even then, he was very, 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 very keen. 17 times he went to Babaji Maharaj for initiation. So, knowledge is the beginning. But knowledge can only fructify when there is a connection with Krishna by Diksha. So, therefore, that element of putting faith in a pure devotee, your initiating spiritual master, is the manure which makes all your knowledge actually become fructified. Otherwise, all that knowledge actually will not fructify into love of God. It's very important. And in fact, on the other way, on the other hand, the South Indian Brahmin, who was completely illiterate, as a complete contrast to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, no knowledge at all of reading any one even word properly from the Bhagavad Gita. But even then, his complete paucity of knowledge led to love of God. Why? Because the element of faith was there. So this is important to see that faith is what makes knowledge actually become realized. It's a very subtle thing. You know, we get impressed by knowledge. Knowledge is very powerful opulence. So a knowledgeable person can impress immediately. By his oration, by his talk, by his thought process, by his analysis, by his discrimination, by his presentation, he can be very attractive. However, and we should appreciate because God has given the opulence to that person. However, whether that knowledge will really take him back to Godhead, or whether it will yield into love of God or not, is dependent on the element of faith. Element of faith. We can see Keshav Kashmiri. That here is a man with a lot of knowledge. So much knowledge. And we're not talking about this sort of knowledge, mundane. He had so much actually of spiritual knowledge. He was not, you know, like a scholar of just some mundane things. In fact, he had a lot of spiritual and material knowledge. He knew all subjects. But we can see that there is no connection with the pure devotee. So he missed the point. If you have any amount of knowledge, but don't have connection with the pure devotee, you will miss the point about all the, what the knowledge is all about. So with all this knowledge of the world, if somebody suffers a person who could read all the, you know, websites of this world, all websites. Now how many websites are there? I'm sure nobody knows. Right?
There are how many? Any, you know, any rough figure? Million? Huh? Millions. Huh? So there is millions of websites on the internet. Now, there was a prodigy of a person who had the intelligence capacity to study all the websites. You can't even study one website properly, right? Usually you go into once and there are so many, you know, things in one website. But if you were to study all the websites, you will still miss the point. You will not know what is the meaning. You are not going to make any head and tail of all this knowledge. That is something like Keshav Kashmir. He had all the websites here, inside. Because Saraswati himself was there. So like, whatever it means, you know. So all knowledge was there. But without the connection with the pure devotee, he just missed the point. Do you think he did not know Bhagavad Gita? Now if you can say, if we absolutely neophyte people with no knowledge of Sanskrit or whatever, we can say manmana bhavo madbhakto, and we can feel this is what Krishna is saying. Obviously it's so simple, can't you see this? Krishna is saying madbhakto, become a devotee. You think this shloka was not known to Keshav Kashmir? Obviously he knew this shloka. Then why did he miss the point? If it said mam ekam sharanam vraja, he knew this verse also. Why did he miss the point? He did not learn to put faith in a pure devotee. He had not met one. So even though he knew the Srimad Bhagavatam, even in Sarvam Bhattacharya, even though he knew the entire gamut of all Vedic literatures, but he had not learned to put his faith in a pure devotee, he missed the point. He became impersonalist. So it is a connection with a pure devotee which is so crucial in our life. Which is the beginning of spiritual life rather. And that amounts to second birth. Because such an important event of life, it is like birth again. It is all of us are reborn. It's not an ordinary thing to consider that event as so important in life that it is calibrated as being equivalent to birth again. Second birth. So we are like that. Now, in this connection, there's a twin flow, back and forth. That means you have to accept your guru with complete faith. And the guru says to accept you as a bona fide disciple. It's not enough to just have one-sided thing. Now we're talking about the subject of evolution of consciousness, evolution of knowledge. So, Bhaktisiddhanta Sri Thakur has accepted in his heart Babaji Maharaj as his Guru Maharaj. So we can say the connection is already there. What's the problem? Why does he need initiation? As long as in the heart he's accepted, so everything is first class. But no, unless he accepts you also, the connection is not complete. There has to be a bilateral connection for service to go upwards and mercy to flow downwards. When we get connected to Guru, the service flows upwards. When Guru connects himself to us, then the mercy flows downwards. So it is a combination of service and mercy which makes the, what you call, the double bond. There is a single bond. It's not enough. Double bond takes place. So that's, we can see that is very, very important. And then, when the bubble wand is made, the connection is made, then as you keep on rendering service in that relationship, then that bond becomes deeper and deeper. It becomes double bond, like when you have in science, you know, triple bond, and you have four bonds, quadruple bond. Carbon has four valencies, you know, so all four bonds. All four bonds. So this bond goes on increasing. Right now, all of us at least have more or less a double bond. But again, that's not enough to take us back to Godhead. When you keep on nurturing that bond through more and more and more faithful service, like Prabhupada, we know this example of somebody who took initiation from Prabhupada in America somewhere, and then he was not seen very next day, he was not seen. All of us know the example. And Prabhupada said, I never initiated him. That means there was, from one side, something happening. Prabhupada was giving him some mercy. But from the other side, there was no connection. So it is all again a single bond. Prabhupada said, I didn't give him any session because I gave him something, he didn't connect himself. So it's like not giving him. So it's a double bond, both sides. So we keep on actually nurturing that. The more and more service rendered through this faith, that makes the relationship become stronger and stronger. But ultimately, what takes us back to Godhead is this rendering of faithful service the spiritual master is pleased with. So that bond becomes thicker. How? The more the guru is pleased, the bond becomes thicker. And when he is completely pleased with you, then he can say, like he told Ghanshyam Maharaj, Ghanshyam Prabhu, Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj. He was so much pleased with his book distribution, you know, going to the library party and taking so much risk for him. And he just embraced him and said, your life is perfect. Your life is perfect. That's it. And when a guru says that to his disciple, your life is perfect, that means it is perfect. The relationship is now in its state of perfection. I gave you all the mercy you needed and use that mercy to distribute my books and to bring the mercy to the other people in this world. So now that bond is thick and established eternally and it is perfect. So we are in that stage where we want to now make that bond become more and more and more and more thicker. And along with this element of hearing which we are doing regularly, we need to also pray for that faith element. And faith will come actually by sincere association with very, very faithful disciples. When you see people with immense faith, rock solid faith, you say, oh, look at this person. Prabhupada used to just once say, you go to Pakistan and preach. Imagine it, you know, when the war hit Pakistan, if somebody tells us, you know, go to Africa and preach. Now, how many of us really start wondering, Guru Maharaj, are you sure? Africa, Liberia. Ladini Mataji, this great disciple of Prabhupada, now she was in New Vrindavan, and Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj called her, and I need some help. He didn't call her. She offered that, can I come and serve you in the zone which you are preaching? And ultimately the connection was made and she actually went. Now in Liberia, at the time, there were 7 factions who are fighting for the power in the country. As one Prince Johnson was there, he was like head of the rebels. And there was anarchy in all 4 directions. There was no food supply, there was no water supply. The only water supply for the whole day was 1 glass of water. 1 glass for the whole day. Do whatever you want with it. And Americans sent a huge ship to excavate all the Americans who were living in that part of the country. And they were all shipped back to America. Because the government said, okay, we want our people to come back. So she had the choice as an American to go back to her motherland and save herself from Liberia. But she was actually there to support all the devotees in this war-struck area who could not make it themselves. She was like the mother for all the devotees at that time. And she kept on faithfully serving Prabhupada and faithfully serving all the war-hit people with food for life. They approached Prince Johnson and said, give us all the supply of food you have. You want to go into power, right? We'll help you go into power. You can only go to power if you are popular with the people. And people, when they get food, they will feel that you are the person. So we'll give the food to the people and they will think that you are doing it. We'll tell them, this is Prince Johnson, we are Johnson's people and we are doing it for you. So she was willing to sort of get partied with a, you know, demonic person to distribute Krishna's mercy of prasad to the war-hit people who are hungry and dying of starvation. And she actually became very favorable to Prince Johnson. She had even preaching to Miss Prince Johnson. Can you imagine preaching to people who are moving with machine guns? A woman, a frail woman, had the guts, the power, the potency and the fearlessness to actually preach to rebels. And bullets, and they're sitting in the temple and you can see bullets and bombs and there are sirens and nobody on the road and there's no water, there's no food. There's complete anarchy and fear and of death at every second. Can you even imagine staying for 1 hour in such a situation? We cannot. Even if we're sitting in the temple here, we will get scared like anything. If something hits this area and there's like bullets and fighting and bombing, even if you're sitting at Radha Govinda temple with all the gold around and everything, you'll feel, wow, this is a terrible place. I don't know where to go. People are hiding behind altars, people are hiding under the, hiding, saving themselves. But what faith in Prabhu Krishna's protection she had. What faith in Prabhupada's protection. That if I keep on serving in this situation also Prabhupada and his Prabhupada's devotees, then my life is perfect. This is the type of faith which actually our devotees have shown. So faith is not just some abstract, you know, thing. Yeah, he seems to be having a lot of faith, you know. It is actually seen in action. Faith is something we have seen in action. Those devotees in Russia, type of faith they put in. Just like Radhini Mata, she would have just taken the ship and gone back to America. Sarabhavna Prabhu and Sachit Prabhu and all those people, they just had to sign some paper and leave the jail. Very simple. Go home, chant Hare Krishna, be happy, distribute prasadam, whatever you want. But they did not sign the paper. But signing the paper would mean freedom to them and bondage to everybody else. The whole movement would be banned from the country. No preaching will take place. There's one signature would have made all the difference. But they did not sign. So we can see in our spiritual life, when you look, examine closely, how that element of faith becomes so important in crucial moments. When somebody kicks you on the, like Shivananda Sen was kicked on the chest by Nityananda Prabhu. Imagine, you know, the person you are worshipping and loving and doing everything for, he just comes and kicks you on the chest. It's not a joke, you know. His wife was thinking, what is this? My husband is doing so much for the devotees, taking them to, you know, back and forth from these yatras to Puri and Bengal, and somebody comes and kicks you on the face and gets angry with you and abuses you. And he said, no, it's all right, you know, it is right for him to do this, you see. After all, Nityananda Prabhu, Nityananda Prahu, you know, we have to take care of him. If you neglect him, you're going to get this kick on your foot. And then he says, I wish that your son dies. Who can take something like this? But Shivananda Sen was completely unmoved. Faith! What type of faith is this? Any of us, you know, who was trying to serve in a yatra or when somebody comes and kicks you on the face, said, you know, you're a rascal manager, you know. You think you're managing the yatra, you don't know anything about management. Get lost from here. It would be insult of such a severe third degree burns, like, you know. Your ego will get completely inflamed. But faith, yes, you are right. Sorry, Prabhu, I'm trying to manage. I think I know management, but I'm sorry, I did not really take care of this. I forgot. Thank you for kicking me. Faith. So, she kept on serving with this sort of faith. And then ultimately somebody said something against Prince Johnson. And he was a madman as it is, because he was just, killing for him was like a routine thing. Just kill anybody and everybody who's against his party. That's as simple as that. So dozens and dozens and dozens were being killed every day. So killing was like, it's like passing stool. It's very simple. So they came to the temple with machine guns. Huge loaded machine guns. And called up all the devotees outside. And devotees, there was a 70-year-old disciple of Prabhupada. He just hid under some altar. Somebody went behind the altar. Somebody went behind the chimney or somewhere. Three or four of them just managed to somehow escape, because they had already planned before. And if someone attacks, this is the place we are going to hide here. So they did not enter the temple. They just called everybody out. And Ladini Mataji and one or two other ladies, they came out with other men. Said, come. They took it into a bridge. Water flowing underneath. Said, we will not kill the women. Just stay away. Some sensibility was there. However demonic, some human sense. We don't want to harm the ladies. We just want to kill these people. So they were aiming at the men to kill them. Huge, powerful, 6.5 feet, muscles, black people. machine guns, huge machine guns. Huh? She said, you cannot kill them. She said, I prefer to, you know, I would like to die myself. Because they are Krishna's devotees. And she held the barrel of this man to prevent from killing his another devotee who was just standing in front. And she got shot. Dropped dead instantly. And they shot everybody else also. Finished. And then these completely anxiety-ridden devotees, you didn't know what's happening. Everything is finished. The temple is ransacked. Everything is removed, thrown. You don't know what really happened. After 1 or 2 days, they just gathered some strength to go out. And they thought they are being geared out by these fellows. You know, they'll kill them if they see them. Someone came out and went and saw. Her sari was floating. So when her faith was tested, next. Thank you very much.